Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Jim Brown. Jim is the owner of Keller Williams Corona. Been in real estate for around 20 years. I did a transaction with him way back in about 1992, even prior to him actually being in the business. And his Keller Williams office did about $1 billion in the first quarter of 2016. So, Jim, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Bruce.
How many agents work in your office? That's a lot of volume.
We have about, it almost changes daily, but approximately 240.
240 agents. And you had mentioned the volume was considerably up from last year, but that's really not in line with what's going on in the marketplace. So you've added agents, or they've gotten better, or you've gotten market share, or all of the above?
A little both. We have a very large market share in the Corona area. We do literally twice what our closest competitor does. But we have, Keller Williams is very, very education focused. So we literally have trainings every day that are involved in the office that are live trainings. And then there's an incredible library of things on video that it's actually digital now, but that anybody can see. For example, if, let's say, somebody wasn't used to doing a probate sale and they had something like that to do, they can actually go online and see everything that has to do with a probate sale that's different in 20 minutes. So we were actually named the number one training company in the country, not just real estate, but of all companies.
What would be the typical length of experience of the agent at your office? I guess I'm trying to see how many people are getting in the business that are brand new, let's say, in the last 3 years.
I'm going to say that we bring in about eight agents a month, and I'm going to tell you that right now about six of those are going to be brand new. And we lose roughly six or seven agents every month. They move, or they get out of the business, or they whatever.
We had talked today. I was speaking at your office earlier this morning, and it's interesting that about half of the people that have real estate license don't actually close a transaction in a calendar year.
Yeah, that's true. Something that I have always found amazing. I will tell you, no matter where you go in the country, any board that you go to, if you pull up their roster and their production, you'll find it everywhere in the country. That's a pretty standard number. Roughly 50% of all real estate licensed people that are members of a board do not do a transaction in a 12-month period of time.
And in our conversation, you also had that you had multiple agents make $1 million in commissions in a year.
Yes, we do.
So, and I'm not an agent, but my clientele, who's investors, deal with agents all the time. What makes the difference between somebody that sells almost nothing and somebody that's, let's say, let's go for not the $1 million a year person. I'll think they're extraordinary for sure. But you had mentioned the figure in the top 10 of the business. What do they do that the other people don't?
As I mentioned earlier, I used to teach attitude, habit, and behavior change. And so I have constantly looked for what it is that makes a top producer. And I can tell you that the common strand that I have seen over the years is somebody that is very competitive by nature.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they have to be competitive by nature, or they're not going to be a top producer. And it's just something that it's a desire, a burning desire that builds inside of them, and they want to win. You've got to be a person that wants to do that. That is the common thread. But what people buy when they hire an agent, what most people are buying,
right,
is they're buying the confidence that person projects. So the people that that come into the business that have a lot of self-confidence, or they learn enough about the business that they feel very confident. That is what transposes to the client that they want. I mean, you want to feel confident in that person that they're going to get you the best deal on the house or get you the most money on your house if you're selling it. That's where we go with the education, trying to give them the confidence that way. But what is very interesting, there's certain professions that come to us people that are retired, or that's something that they've been doing, and there's certain professions that just do much better than the average person. For example, retired police officers tend to do really well as realtors because they project that confidence. That's what they've been trained to do, is project that confidence, and people buy into it.
Okay.
But when I opened an office, I had no idea at that time. I opened this office 13 years ago. At that time, I had no idea how many agents did nothing. It astonished me, and I had no idea that, I'm going to tell you, that 10% of the people do roughly 90% of the business. And you're going to see that. You're going to see that even change more in that direction.
Now, why do you say that? Because of what?
Because of the way the industry is changing. There's the new concept, and basically, it's been around for about 15 years, and it's just now really gaining momentum. And that's the team building with a rainmaker, if you will, running a team of people and leveraging his business. One of the big things that Keller Williams is doing now is it's called expansion selling, where an agent that is a rainmaker in one area. And what makes you a rainmaker is if you can produce leads. That is the business. The business is creating leads. And one of the things that people are doing now is, let's say you're building a big business in Corona and you have generated more leads than you can work. So once you have that going, it's literally a machine that is creating these leads. Then what happens is you start adding buyer's agents, and you can actually have listing agents. You can have people to just show properties for you. But they're taking that business that you have here. For example, in our office, we have a gentleman that he does that here, and now he's opened another branch in Cerritos. So he works out of this office and out of Cerritos, and he's got that going. There's another gentleman in this office that came here. He started in Las Vegas. His business is doing that in Las Vegas. He's got a team there working. He has now moved here to Corona, and he is building a team here. And you're going to see that expansion. So that one talented person that has that vision, and we offer that training, how to build a team to do that. And you're going to see that more and more and more and more.
Is the real estate agent world dominated by men or women?
Wow.
in investing, it's dominated by men. It doesn't mean we don't have successful women.
Usually, Bruce, I think the world is dominated by women. But, for example, in my office, I think we're pretty even. I've got 250 people. I'm going to say it's pretty much a 50-50 split.
Do agents begin their career concentrating on sales because they really don't have any listings, and then morph into more listings than sales? How does that transition?
Generally, most people come into sales because that's something that they deal with, the sales part, simply because those leads are easier to generate than listing leads. You can do an open house and people come in looking for a house. They get into the business because somebody they know wants to buy a house. Or something along those lines. So I would say most people do sales first. Myself, it was a crazy thing how I got into it, and I sold a lot of houses my first year, and all but one of them were sales because I hadn't figured out how to do a listing yet. So it was like that. But you can handle the high producing agents. Where you make money in real estate is being a listing agent. It's hard to do. It's hard to do a lot of sales because they're so time consuming.
How has the buyer's habits changed in the last decade or the last 5 years? Have they become more independent? and more capable of looking for stuff themselves? Or you at least, know, you, at least you, they think so.
You asked that question. There are a lot of buyers out there that know more than the agents that they're talking to because of the internet. The internet has changed so much. My big problem with it, and I think most every agent's problem with it, is that because of the internet, people don't ever stop looking. You sell somebody a house, and you're 15 days into escrow, and they call you up and they want to see some others because something else has popped up on Zillow or Realtor.com or something else, that they don't ever stop. So that's a deal I try to make with anybody right up front. Look, here's how it's going to work. If, as soon as we find the right house for you, you're going to stop looking, right? Because if you don't, they'll make you crazy because they'll never stop. And, you know, there's always something else. But, yeah, there's so much information and there's so much inaccurate information on like Zillow and Realtor.com and things like that because they don't really understand how to assimilate the information. I know you're a charts kind of guy, and you take somebody who doesn't know what they're looking at, and they look at your charts, and they don't really know what they're looking at.
Correct, yeah, they can't extrapolate what the real meaning would be.
Exactly, and that's, you know, you look at something like Redfin or something like that, and that house that they're looking at might have sold 6 months ago, and they just never took it off.
Right.
So,
does the industry in general, I'm talking about agents that work with buyers, do you demand an agreement, just like a listing agreement? Do you say, you know, I'm really not going to spend a lot of time unless we know we're a match, so I'm going to have a buyer's agreement to show you around?
Several do. That is something that is optional. But here's the problem with them. It's very hard to enforce it. You've literally, if you sign a buyer's contract and let's say they go off and buy a house for somebody else, what do? You have to sue the people. And who wants to do that?
No, you can pass on that. But I guess just as a commitment, would you have you'd have a much more logical.
I don't personally, and the reason I say that is because I personally wouldn't sign one. So, because I personally wouldn't sign one, I've never asked a client to do that, but I have some very, very successful agents in this office that wouldn't take you out and show you a house if you didn't sign it.
Okay. Interesting. The client getting approved in this cycle, is that a big impediment to them getting ultimately to go from renter to owner? Is it hard to get a yes answer from a lender at this point?
No.
No.
I don't see where that's changed at all through everything. There might be a higher percentage that are getting no, but the process, we generally know in a few hours if in fact they can qualify to buy a house. The process, it doesn't take much.
Okay, so you can know that very quickly to where you're not spending a lot of time and you're not going. You know, it's frustrating. I tell you, on the other side of that is a guy that owns a property like myself, and you go through an escrow with the expectation that it's going to close, and then sometimes it doesn't. The only one that costs money really is the guy that's writing a check on a mortgage, on a hard money loan. So, you know, we kind of get pretty particular about who we end up in escrow with. But just in general, you're saying the process is as clear as a bell, but the people you also alluded to, there are a lot of people getting a no answer that used to be able to get a yes.
Well, that is absolutely true. But there's something that I do, and I think most really good realtors do, and that's if I have a listing and somebody sends me an offer, and they always, with that offer, they'll send proof of funds, and they will send a pre-qualification letter. Okay, well, a pre-approval letter is a lot better, but even that, so many lenders, I hate to say this to a lender, but so many lenders lie, or they don't know what they're doing.
Well, yeah, that's...
They'll give almost anybody a pre-qual letter, because they might not even have checked their credit.
Right.
So if before I'm going to take a client of mine and let them get tied up in an escrow, I'm going to have a lender that I know and trust do what we call a cross-qualifying. And so before I'll take somebody out and put them in my car or meet them at a property, they're going to talk with my lender. They're going to send their information to my lender. Or if it's an offer on a piece of property that I have for sale, before I'm going to have my client accept that offer, we're going to have my lender look at that individual to see if they could get them a loan. Because if they can't, then the other guy can't either, more than likely.
Okay.
And so that cross-qualifying is a real service to do for your seller. I mean, you know, I think you're doing your seller a disservice if you tie their property up and you haven't got a second opinion that this person's going to be able to buy a house.
Jim, what percentage of your current sales are owner occupant versus investor, and has that changed in the last 3 years?
I would say it's probably gone up a little bit, but not drastically. It's certain agents we have here deal with a lot of investors, and the majority of agents do not, just because they haven't hooked up with the right one, or somebody that will be loyal to them, or something along those lines. But I'm going to say that, probably 5% of the transactions that we do are investor sales.
Are these typically buy and hold types of purchases, would you say, or are they flipping opportunities?
Both.
Okay.
They both come up. One of our very top agents. He's got some people that are so loyal to them that he's made them so much money over the years that what he does is he finds a good deal on a house. He calls them. They buy it. When it's time that he thinks that they should pull their money out of that, that it's reached that point, he calls them and says, I think it's time to sell it, and they sell it. And he's got a pretty sweet life, and things are going well, and he's made a lot of people a lot of money, and he himself makes over $1 million a year.
So, well, a lot of his clients have more than one house, so that's helpful.
Oh, yeah, they have a lot of them. Some of them, they'll buy as many houses as he finds for him. He's built up the trust over the years. He's been in the business about 20 years, and they've built up that trust that they don't even care if they see the house. If he says it's a deal, go buy it, they'll go buy it. You know, they're people with money.
Right.
And he's made them so much money over the years that, the trust factor is there.
How nimble are agents when changing gears becomes necessary?
Wow. That's all about, most agents are kind of on the sheepish side and just, they don't run a business like a business, and that's one of the things we really try to teach is to run your business like a business and to know if you're making money or losing money and what you've got and where your leads come from and that kind of stuff. And we actually teach a course called Shift, and that's it's based on a book that was written by Mr. Keller, and it's all about when markets shift and what to do and how to deal with it. And so we actually train exactly for that. And it's the ones that get out ahead of it. When you see the short sales coming and you get ready for that, and you see the REOs and get ready for that. And I'll also mention that the REO business actually killed a lot of agents because they put their whole heart and soul and everything they've got into doing that. And when the REOs went away, which they did literally overnight, all of a sudden, boom, they're out of business.
Yeah, and what,
because they weren't doing the regular business.
What was unfortunate about that is that shouldn't have happened to that business model. That was an orchestrated end instead of a natural end. So that would be pretty frustrating.
Oh, it was. I thought, the REOs, to deal with them, it's not as easy as most people think. And a lot of it took a lot of money out of pocket. And it's something that was literally impossible to do by yourself. You literally had to build a support team on that. And so several people had a lot of people working for them on payroll and people running, because you have to do a report on every house every week. And when all of a sudden they just stopped and overnight they stopped coming in, and overhead will kill you. It just will.
One thing you said, you and I were talking either in the front of the group or it was by ourselves, but you had mentioned that, and I think this was in front of a group, you said that you thought there were, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I won't use considerable, I just did, but when you have sales, we talked about people migrating to other places. So what's your sense of the percentage of sellers that are saying, hey, it's been great, and they're going somewhere else to retire? Because that's not usual.
Well, my personal experience has been that since I'm not out there hustling every day like most of them are now. What I deal with is mostly previous clients, and it's my previous clients. It seems like every phone call I get about that is I'm losing a client because they're selling locally and they're retiring, and I've had a few go to Idaho lately, and some go to Hawaii, some go to Texas, Arizona, but they seem to be leaving California, and that's because they can take their equity here generally and buy a house cash and not have a house payment anymore somewhere else. That's what I've seen a lot of, but I can tell you that when the younger people move out of California, which I've had that experience because I've been in this business for quite a while, when the younger people move out of California, you want to stay in touch with them because 2 to 3 years later, they're coming back.
Okay. But the seniors, not likely.
The senior people, not so much.
Do you see anything decision-wise that could be threatening to our industry, such as let's change the rules of interest being deductible or Prop 13 changes? Do you see anything down the pike that you're concerned about?
I can't tell you that I've spent a lot of time being concerned about it because I feel I have absolutely no control over it.
Okay.
But I will tell you that I would absolutely, if they take that last benefit to open owning a home, of having that your interest being tax deductible, boy, I think that would be a huge mistake, and absolutely it would hurt the industry. But do I? You know, just like you were talking about your lawnmower story, the ability to own your own home and not have to answer to somebody else about if you can have a dog or what you're going to do with the planter or whatever. I think that would continue to ring true with most. But there's got to be a benefit to owning a home. There's got to be.
It just seems to be a target and a natural one, you know, as far as if you're going to try and chase more revenue. We've had a lot of goodies for a while. So,
yeah,
you know, and the state of California seems to be one of those in the mood to say that let's take a piece of this. And I don't know if they can change Prop 13 for the residential, you know, the person that lives in the property, but they're going to work at it.
Of course they are. Taxes is that's a whole nother phone call, Bruce. The way I feel about being taxed to death, it is
one of those things that people will leave the state for. We have about 40 seconds left,
yes.
But you know, California doesn't do itself a lot of favors with that. You know, if you're making a fair amount of money, you could definitely make a case for saying, you know what, I think I'm going to go somewhere.
I can tell you that if I was going to open up another business, I would open it up in another state. California is very unbusiness friendly, and I think it's a mistake. The reason why people keep coming back is the weather. That's what California's got. And
it always will, apparently.
Yeah. But the city government, City of Corona passed a thing through city council about 2 weeks ago where any new construction, they're going to be able to put a CFD on it, with basically raising the taxes on new homes up to 1.95%.
Wow.
So whatever the tax base is, they can add that to it, which I thought was terrible. But on top of that, even after that initial raise to 1.95%, they can raise it an additional 4% of that, of whatever that increase was, every year thereafter.
Wow.
And this is all at the city council's discretion.
Wow.
And so if you own property in this area, to me, they just devalued it because now it's more expensive to build. And it's another hurdle for, you know, people say, well, developers can afford that. They make so much money or this. developers aren't going to pay a penny of it. They're going to pass it all on to the buyers.
Right.
Jim, and that's going to make it that much harder.
We've run out of time. We've been speaking with Jim Brown, and he is the owner of Keller Williams Corona. Jim, thanks a lot for joining us, and I appreciated talking to your group today.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.